Welcome to episode 72 of the Instructional Leadership Show. I'm your host, Justin Bader, and in this episode, we're going to talk about how to detect and prevent burnout with boundaries. And I'm going to share a model for thinking about boundaries that will be somewhat familiar, but I hope to add a few dimensions to your thinking around burnout, both for yourself and for the people that you work with. So our essential question for today is how can we detect and prevent burnout in ourselves and in our colleagues? And I'll be speaking specifically today to school administrators. So if you're a principal or assistant principal and you see these signs of burnout in yourself or you see them in the teachers that you work with, it's my goal today to prompt you to take some actions to intervene and to mitigate the factors that may be leading to burnout. Now, I know this is a time of year when there are a lot of kind of one-time things that are going on right now to get started with the year, to figure things out. Our kids' teachers are getting slammed with requests for passwords for remote learning and all those different things. So we're, trying not to send them too many emails and ask them too many things. You know, there are some one-time issues that tend to come up at the beginning of the year that are just incredibly stressful, right? Like you're gonna have long days at the beginning of the year. You're going to have a ton of emails on certain days just when certain things are happening. But that's not burnout, right? One tough day is not burnout. One tough week at the beginning of the school year is not what puts you on the track to burnout. We're talking about something else here. We're talking about a long-term condition that pushes people either out of their job, you know, they get disengaged, they get overworked, they get overstressed, and they have to leave their job, or they even get pushed out of the profession by those burnout-producing forces. By the way, if you're joining us live, let me know, leave a comment, let me know you're here and what platform you are joining us on, and I should be able to see that as we go along. So if burnout is not just temporary stress, what is it? I decided to look at the National Institutes of Health and found an article that's referenced on the screen here that identifies three main areas of symptoms that may indicate that burnout is happening or on its way. And the first, of course, we're going to feel this at the beginning of the school year no matter what, but the first is exhaustion. And over the long term, continually feeling drained, continually feeling like you can't keep up, like you're just always exhausted, always worn down, and just don't have the energy you need to do the job. And sometimes that's because of the job itself. Let's be honest, sometimes that's also because of medical conditions. And I was talking with a colleague recently or reading some updates from a colleague recently who had Lyme disease, had a chronic inflammatory and autoimmune disorder that really made it impossible for her to continue her job as a teacher. And just the energy level that's required did not match the energy level that she had. And she decided, if I'm going to survive as a professional, if I'm going to survive as a living person, I need to allow myself the time to recover. And she did. She has made incredible progress on her health and is back in the workforce. But the reality is if you don't have the energy for physical reasons, you just can't fake that, right? There are some very real constraints that we have to keep in mind that may be there for some people despite their desire for those constraints not to be there. The second, and I think probably for me the biggest sign and the one that we need to keep a sharp eye out for, is alienation, or what we might think of as cynicism and disengagement. If we start to think, I used to like this job, I used to love coming to work every day, but now I just kind of hate it, I hate the organization, I hate the work I'm doing, that sense of disconnection from the job and from feeling like it's a place where you belong and like it's work you enjoy is probably one of the clearest signs of burnout, right? You're going to be exhausted. That's not necessarily a bad sign if you're exhausted the first week of school. But if this just does not feel like the job that you want to do long term, then that may be more of a sign. And I especially want to encourage you to keep an eye out for that when it comes to the teachers that you work with. If it feels like this is not the job they signed up for, if they're feeling disengaged and alienated and cynical, that is a pretty strong sign of burnout. And of course, over time, that exhaustion and that disengagement lead to a drop in performance, right? There's just no good way to be good at your job if you hate it and you don't have the energy to do it. So reduced performance is the third criterion there. And what we're going to talk today is about not only how to recognize it, which we've are already touched on here, but how to prevent it and how to deal with it. And the central model that I want to share with you today is a pyramid that I want you to think of in kind of Maslow-esque terms, right? If you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it's a, what, 6 or 7 layer pyramid with some of the more basic physical needs at the bottom and then more emotional and esteem and social needs toward the top. I have a simpler framework for you today that is also depicted as a pyramid for reasons that will become obvious in just a moment. If you think about the longest standing buildings on planet Earth, right? The buildings that humans created the longest ago that are still standing, you know, freestanding structures made from scratch. What is it? What are the most stable buildings and the longest standing buildings on Earth? They are, of course, the pyramids, right? The pyramids have been there for thousands upon thousands of, what, I think it's like 4,000 years, some of the pyramids have been standing. And I would argue that it is because they are so stable. Now, they're made of strong stuff, certainly. They're made of stone. They're carved from solid rock and, you know, into big stones, but they're configured in an extremely stable way. And I'm going to suggest to you that the most stable way to arrange your career as an educator and the most stable way to position yourself within a role as an educator is to build this type of pyramid with personal strength at the foundation, with professional strength at the middle, and with the role, the specific job that you're in, on top as the as kind of the capstone there. But what happens in a lot of, you know, cases where we see burnout, what happens in a lot of schools to large numbers of people that burn people out by design, just by virtue of the way they are run and put together, is we end up with kind of a mushroom-shaped pyramid, right? There's no such thing as a mushroom-shaped pyramid, but what happens is when the role demands too much of people and it says, you know what, you don't really get to have a personal life, forget about ever having kids, you know, this is just a job that's going to eat you up, it's going to demand all of your time, you're going to have to work 80 hours a week forever, you're not going to have any hobbies, Saturday you're going to be in here prepping for the next week, Sunday night I need to see your lesson plans, you don't really get a weekend. In order to succeed at this job, it needs all of you. It demands every ounce of energy you have. That is not going to produce a pyramid-shaped hierarchy. It is going to produce a top-heavy mushroom or even kind of space needle tower-shaped top-heavy unstable shape. And of course, we're speaking in terms of models and metaphors here, but I think you know what I mean. Do you know what I mean about that unstable, top-heavy, demanding role that just asks for what you don't have to give? Have you ever been in a role like that? Probably most people are going to find themselves in a role like that at some point in their lives. And either they're going to burn out of it and say, you know what, I need to find a different job. Or they might even say to themselves, you know what, I don't think this profession is for me. I'm going to go do something else entirely that allows me to have a more stable life, that allows me to not feel so imbalanced. So I think what we have to really be cognizant of is that if there is a crack in that foundational level of the pyramid, if people are not able to have the personal life, the personal strength, the personal well-being that they need, guess what's going to happen to those upper layers? Guess what's going to happen to someone's performance as a professional, their ability to participate in the profession, and of course, their ability to perform in a given job? Well, that crack in the foundation is going to extend all the way to the top of the pyramid. And we are going to see that. And you know, if you're a principal, you have no doubt seen that crack form in somebody's pyramid many times throughout your career. Perhaps it's a personal crisis like a divorce. Often it becomes very obvious to an administrator when a teacher is going through a divorce, even if they don't say anything, because of the crack that it creates in their pyramid. You simply do not have the energy. You simply do not have the space in your brain. You know, maybe there are just lots and lots of things going on, maybe financial challenges and court battles. You know, that crack in the foundation can absolutely affect someone's job performance. And we know that. We know that people can have things that they're going on in their personal lives that they're dealing with, and we may have to kind of work with people and be patient with them and develop a plan to make sure that they are able to do what they need to do to serve their students. But what we're here to talk about today is not people who are going through a divorce or some other kind of one-time thing in their personal lives. What we're here to talk about today is when the job itself is what is causing that crack throughout the pyramid and causing things to kind of fall apart for people. And I believe that as a profession, we have something of a cultural and structural flaw. The flaw that says that the best way for teachers to make a contribution is to be a hero, to give everything, to do whatever it takes, to be 100% committed. Because when we have that mindset, we end up creating a mushroom-shaped pyramid, which again is a non sequitur, right? There is no such thing as a mushroom-shaped pyramid. And what of course happens is that that pyramid topples, that mushroom topples over and people burn out. So I want to present to you an alternate paradigm today, an alternate belief that says educators have the greatest possible impact when they operate with maximum professionalism, not maximum sacrifice. I do not want people working 80 hours a week and coming in on Saturday and working all day Sunday on their lesson plans for the week or the week after that if I need them a week in advance. I do not want to set people up to have an unstable life pyramid. I want them to operate with maximum professionalism, not maximum sacrifice. And for you, if you are the leader who is setting the pace for your organization, I want to challenge you to operate with maximum professionalism, not maximum sacrifice. So there is a particular impetus that it's on us. There's an imperative that is upon leaders right now to support and to intervene and to help teachers who are at risk of burning out. And I want to challenge you to do this for yourself as well, to simply shrink the job if it is too much. And this is something that I probably could not successfully write a book on. I probably could not get a great workshop series on the road about shrinking your job and shrinking the job that you want your teachers to do and asking less and demanding less. This is an unpopular thing to say. Probably no one will be super happy to hear that I'm saying this, but it may be exactly what you need to hear. When people do not have the strength and the energy and the bandwidth to do their job based on what's in those lower levels of the pyramid, what is on top of the pyramid, the job, has to shrink. That, my friends, is the reality. There is no alternative to shrinking the job if we want to keep people in the profession. And I think perhaps there was a time when we thought we could just demand more and more of teachers. We could just say, well, I don't care if you don't want to work on Saturdays or work all day Sundays to get your lesson plans done or work till 10 p.m. every night. I don't care. That's the job. That's what we expect in this organization. No excuses. Well, we found out what happens when you tell people that year after year after year. They realize, you know what? I could do something else with my life, or I could go work in another district nearby that's going to treat me like a professional and not treat me like a grindstone that, you know, that can be worn down, worn smooth through overuse. People will simply leave. And this is a year in particular where we already have massive numbers of people retiring. We are already have large numbers of people taking leave, and we have people resigning right and left simply because of the pandemic, right? They don't want to put themselves at risk and be in schools during the pandemic. So if we want to retain people, we have to take this seriously. We have to respect the fact that everyone deserves to have that stable life pyramid. Now, I want to be very clear that what I'm not talking about here is this idea of a personal life in the sense of I don't really want to have much responsibility. I'm not saying that in order to have an ideal professional pyramid that everybody should be able to go out drinking every night, you know, maybe like they did in college, and still show up and do a good job. I'm not talking about the kind of personal life that says, you know what, my personal life is going to put me so out of control that it's going to affect my work. I'm going to show up not really ready for work. That's not the kind of thing we're talking about. When I talk about a stable pyramid, when I talk about a stable foundational layer to that pyramid, we're talking simply about wellness. We're talking about energy. We're talking about the ability to live healthily and show up and do the job successfully. And that is what that pyramid model means. So at the top of that pyramid, we'll put that back up here on the screen for just a second. That pyramid, you notice the personal level is the largest. So people should not be spending 90% of their waking hours at school. And the role part of the pyramid is smaller than the professional part of the pyramid. I believe that most educators will move through several positions, maybe work for more than one organization throughout their career. So the job is the thing that is most easy for people to change. And if we want to retain people in a job, sometimes, and particularly at this time, when we've piled a lot onto people, we may need to shrink the job. And we'll talk about some strategies for doing that as we go along today. Typically, people shrink the job by leaving it, by sharing it with someone else. You know, I had a lot of teachers in my school who worked half-time. They were job share teachers. They teamed up, you know, to have a homeroom class together. One person would take certain days and the other person would take other days, or they'd do morning and afternoon. Worked quite well in my particular school. But there are a number of ways that people could kind of create the, you know, the schedule that worked for them and their families. Other people shrink the job by saying, you know what, not all this is going to get done today. I'm going to leave at 6, or I'm going to leave at 5, or I'm going to leave at 4, whatever time they needed to leave in order to have kind of a healthy boundary for themselves there. But those are the normal strategies, and they may not be enough in extreme cases. One extreme case is a life-threatening illness. And I talked about the friend with a chronic illness. Had another client who was having to take a year off in order to fight cancer. And in order to survive, in order to get through that time, he had to completely eliminate his current job from that pyramid. And what he decided to do was remain in the profession and stay a professional, keep up a little bit with professional reading and kind of stay in the loop. But he knew he could not do a demanding 60-hour a week job and go to chemo and recover and, you know, take care of himself. So he just said, you know what, I'm going to take this year off. I'm going to fight this. I'm going to win. And he did. And by cutting off that role layer of the pyramid, he was able to survive. And hopefully he would have survived even if he had tried to work that year, even if he had, you know, tried to kind of power through it. But I, for one, am grateful that he made that choice to take the year off and then to come back stronger than ever. So what are some different ways we can think about shrinking that role? Obviously, leaving a job entirely and then coming back to a different job or that same job in the future is one option. I want to introduce a few more metaphors and ways of thinking about these boundaries for you. And, you know, one of the things that we often use as a metaphor is this idea of kind of a seesaw. We talk about work-life balance. And I don't particularly like this metaphor because it too often, you know, if we think of it as a balance, too often there's imbalance, right? Maybe at the beginning of the school year, the professional side balloons, it becomes huge, and there are all these extra things to deal with, and it becomes imbalanced, and then we try to fix that by, you know, sliding the fulcrum over and trying to make it balanced again. But it's always in motion, and it never really balances. You know, we never really end up with work-life balance. So I want to instead encourage you to think in terms of boundaries rather than balance. So again, that pyramid model. And the foundational layer of the pyramid is that personal well-being, personal wellness, personal health, personal strength. And of course, that includes physical, mental, and all the different dimensions of health. The second layer is the professional layer. You know, of course, people need to have professional values. They need to have internalized professional norms. They need to have professional training that transcends what they're doing in one particular job in order to do that one particular job successfully. And we know if those professional boundaries get violated, right? Like if a particular job calls upon someone to lie and cheat, like we saw in some of the high stakes testing scandals of years past, that can really, you know, be a career-ending move for someone to violate their professional ethics because they're asked to by a particular role. So really, the first things have to come first here, right? We have to have that stable pyramid. So let's talk a little bit more about burnout, but about detecting and responding to and preventing burnout. You know, we talked about the NIS or National Institutes of Health (NIH). Criteria earlier for detecting burnout. But some of the things you might see just in kind of layman's terms in the workplace, you know, with people in your organization, you might see things like boredom. You might see disengagement. You might see cynicism. And you might say, well, of course, I see all of those things every day. Have you ever worked with a staff? I mean, yes, these things are going to be present to some degree in every school. You're going to have people who are at varying levels, cynical, disengaged, and bored. And of course, the people who are the most that way are the most at work, most at risk of burning out, and may in the long term, you know, in some cases, people may need to leave the profession. You know, we all know people who really just are not a good fit for the profession, and the only way they are going to be happy and have that stable pyramid is to do something else for their job. But my concern today, my focus in this episode, is all around setting people up for success so that they can stay in the profession and they can stay in the job long term, because these are trying times. And what we don't want to see people doing is borrowing from the bottom levels of the pyramid, saying, you know what, I'm just going to make the personal sacrifice. I'm going to work till 10 p.m. every night. I'm going to do whatever it takes to succeed 100% and not try to shrink the job, but instead make a personal sacrifice. I think we have to be very careful when it comes to sacrifice, because long term, people can only give what they have to give. People can only give from a place of strength, or else it's going to be an unsustainable sacrifice, right? Like if you want to donate blood plasma, I looked it up, I think you can do that about once a month. If you want to donate blood, you can do that every 2 months, you know, because it regenerates, it grows back. You can donate a kidney. It doesn't grow back, but you have two of them. I had a high school teacher who was the recipient of a kidney transplant, saved his life. So it's been interesting to follow his story as he received that transplant with gratitude. But you can only donate an essential organ that does not grow back, like your heart, once and only under one circumstance, right? We have to give from a place of strength, and we have to ask our staff to give from a place of strength, not from a place of unsustainable sacrifice. So ask yourself, personally, am I putting my own oxygen mask on first? That's a metaphor we've heard a lot this year. Put your own oxygen mask on first. Make sure you're taking care of yourself. Prioritize your own well-being, your mental health, your physical health, exercise, nutrition, all of those things. We've got to build that foundational layer of the pyramid. And from there, we need to ask ourselves the 80-20 question. What is the 80-20 of our work and of what we're asking teachers to do? You might have heard the Pareto principle from economics that says that 80% of inputs produce only 20% of the outputs. You know, most of what's, you know, the effort that's put forth is not what produces the results. It's only 20% of the inputs that typically produce about 80% of the outputs. And there are many applications of this in all kinds of different fields. It's not an ironclad law. It's a general rule of thumb. And if you think about what makes the biggest difference for your students, when it comes to student learning, probably just a handful of things make the majority of the difference. If you think about the summer learning slide, what is it that causes some students to gain ground over the summer and causes other students to lose ground over the summer? I would suggest that one of those 20% inputs that produces 80% or more of the outputs in terms of summer learning gain is independent reading or being read to at home. We know there are kids who read over the summer and there are kids who do not. And to me, that explains a lot of the learning gap that widens over the summer. So we've got to really ask ourselves, what is it that makes the biggest difference for learning? How can we get teachers doing more of that small percentage of things that make the biggest difference and less of those things that fill up the day, that consume teachers' time, but don't really make that much of a difference for learning? The teacher way of talking about this, I love this phrasing, is when something gets added to the plate, something has to come off the plate. And what I think we need to recognize as leaders is that when people say that to us, when people say, well, okay, we've got this new mandate, I have to use this new system and upload my stuff to there every day or whatever, when we add something like that to people's plates, they're not saying, in exchange, will you please take something off my plate? What they're saying is, guess what? Since you have added something to my plate, something will inevitably fall off the plate, right? If we just stand there with a ladle and pile stuff on the plate, you know, they're not being polite to say, can you take something off the plate? No, they're saying something is going, like it's reality, something is going to fall off the plate. So how can we do that? How can we get things off of people's plates in a strategic and intentional way? I think, again, we've got to look at that 80-20 rule. How can we do less of what doesn't make that much of a difference and more of what does? A couple of additional strategies for eliminating work from teachers. The first, I have to say, our local schools here have modeled this brilliantly, of avoiding duplicated effort, right? If you have a team of teachers that have the same responsibility, they teach the same courses to the same age of students, or maybe not in the same school, maybe your school is very small and you don't have people teaching the same thing. Everybody teaches something different. There is no reason that every single member of our profession should do completely original and unique and different work in parallel to one another without sharing anything, without copying and pasting. This is the time to copy and paste and to share the load. And like never before this year, my own kids are getting to see the other teachers in their grade level because the teachers are splitting up the work. They're avoiding duplicating effort. So one person will record the math videos for the week, another person will design the writing prompts for the week. You know, they're doing a great job of splitting up the work to make it more manageable. Number two, I think we need to put a moratorium on creating documents. If the work that needs to get done is creating a document, that is almost certainly going to be in the 80% of tasks that do not produce results. So let's put that in the fridge. Let's put that on the back burner for now. And then the third strategy that I want to leave you with today is to give people permission to simply stop doing something that's very time consuming, that doesn't seem to have many benefits, but it's supposedly mandatory, it's required. Well, this might be a good time to do a little experiment and to say, well, what if we just stop doing that for a while? Let's see who complains and let's see what they complain about. And let's see if we can get ourselves the results we need without so much work. This is a time when we have really got to be honest with ourselves about what's possible, about what's necessary, so that we can create that stable pyramid for ourselves and for the teachers that we work with. And all of this can be temporary, right? These can be temporary changes. If we decide we don't have time to do something right now, we don't have to throw it in the trash forever. We can say, you know what? We'll come back to that later. We'll put it in the fridge. If something comes off the plate, it can either go in the trash or it can go in the fridge. We can store that for later. We can put that on ice and revisit it later. If we need to update our strategic plan and people just do not have the bandwidth for that right now, maybe we update the strategic plan in the spring instead of the fall. There are changes like that that we can make to make this job more doable. And all of those would be preferable to what's going to happen if we don't lighten the load for people, which is that we simply lose people or we ourselves burn out. So this is a tough topic. If some of this has hit a little close to home, please give yourself some grace, give yourself permission to lighten your load, to shrink the top of that pyramid if the bottom of the pyramid is also shrinking so that it retains that stable shape. Please take care of yourself and let me know if there's anything that I can do to support you. This has been episode 72 of the Instructional Leadership Show, How to Detect and Prevent Burnout with Boundaries. I'm Justin Bader, and I'll see you next time. Take care.